Joseph. Ah, he's such a big character, right? It's why an entire musical was written just about him. One that I saw recently and Abigail ran tech for. He is this larger than life figure, right? Rising from the pit of darkness all the way up to the halls of power. I mean, he survives slavery, he survives prison, and he becomes the chief administrator over an entire nation. He saves the world from a brutal famine. But I don't want to spend pretty much any of our time on most of that this morning. That's too flashy. I want to notice who Joseph is behind closed doors, when no one's looking. Is Joseph special? Is he a good and righteous man who walks closely with the God of his ancestors? Or is Joseph just like his father and his grandfather and his great-grandfather, deeply flawed, yet chosen by God in spite of those flaws? To figure out who Joseph is, we have to look at two brief stories. And so kids, I'm gonna actually ask you for a little bit more help this morning. I know you've got stuff to write on and to draw, but if you'll listen to these two stories, I bet you'll be able to tell the rest of us right away what's going on, okay? So if you have your Bibles, turn them with me to the end of Genesis chapter 43. So Genesis chapter 43, here we find Joseph's 11 brothers coming back down to Egypt from Canaan, where they've been living, where they live with their father. And there's this massive famine that's still going strong, and Joseph's family has run out of food again. So they've come back to beg Joseph for more. And here's the thing, they don't recognize Joseph as their brother, the brother they sold into slavery when he was only 17 years old. But here, Joseph takes them, all 11 of them, he sits them at a table for a meal, and we read verse 34, and this is out of the English Standard Version. Portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was 5 times as much as any of theirs, and they drank and were merry with him. Kids, did you notice what happened? How many more times was food was Benjamin given than any of his other brothers? Just show me with your hand. I see a 5, I see a 5, I see a 5. Yep, 5, good. You know, it seems that everybody was so happy to eat something, nobody seemed to notice or care that Benjamin got 5 times more. Okay, let's jump to our second story, our second behind the scenes Joseph story. So turn the page over to chapter 45. Here in our passage, Joseph is now sending these 11 brothers back up to Canaan to get their dad, to get all of their families, and to get all of their stuff to move back. So verse 21 says this, Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the journey. To each and all of them, he gave a change of clothes. But to Benjamin, he gave 300 shekels of silver and 5 changes of clothes. Did you notice what Joseph's brother got? Everyone got a wagon and provisions and a change of clothes. But how many changes of clothes did Benjamin get? I see it. Thanks, Penny. Benjamin got 300 shekels of silver and 5 changes of clothes. This is really interesting, right? This is the second story where Joseph gives something to all of his brothers, but Benjamin gets more. Not just more, but 5 times more. Now, kids, this is where I really need your help, okay? Think about your brother or sister, or if you don't have one, imagine what it would be like to have a brother and sister, and you're the exact same age, and you've done the exact same amount of chores. Would it be good or fair for your sister or brother to get more candy than you? No. I like the verbal, okay, I'm seeing some head shakes, right? fair? I know some of you are very aware of fairness. Yes, I got a thumbs down. Thanks, Carson. Would it be more fair for your sibling, your brother or sister, to get more screen time than you?
No.
No, that got some responses. Or more Christmas presents?
No.
No, exactly. Of course not. You would, as my daughters have occasionally done, accuse your parents of playing favorites. Or there's another word the Bible uses to talk about playing favorites. It's called being partial. When you are being partial, you treat one person or one group better than another person or another group. And while it can feel really nice to get special treatment, I think most of us also sense that it's not a good thing. Well, because this morning we are going to talk about partiality in the story of Joseph. Not to just wag our finger and say, don't play favorites, but this morning's message is going to take us straight into the heart of our impartial God. We'll also find a challenge laid down for us in our passage. Every time we discover that we have been blessed by God with possessions, power, a position, or privilege, we discover that we have work to do. We'll get to all of that. For now, I want to just jump back into the Joseph story. Joseph gives 5 times more food and clothes to his brother Benjamin. But why Benjamin? Of all 11, it's easy. If you know the story, the 12 brothers, they all come from 4 different mothers. And Benjamin is Joseph's brother from the same mother. Joseph favors full blood over half blood. But maybe you're thinking, right, so what? What's the big deal? People often feel much closer to their full siblings than their half siblings. This feels a lot like a normal thing to make a big deal over. But I want to suggest that the author is actually laying clues for us in the story to notice a larger pattern in Joseph's life and character. If Joseph plays favorites in small things, it's likely he plays favorites in big things. If Joseph will treat his own brothers differently, how does Joseph judge between Egyptian and brother? Well, in chapter 47, we get our answer. We heard it read this morning. Chapter 47 is shaped perfectly to highlight Joseph's treatment of his own family on either end in contrast to the treatment of the Egyptians in the middle. So turn with me to chapter 47, verse 11, where we read, and my scripture readings are all out of the ESV this morning, the English Standard Version. Then Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land. Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with food. In the middle of a famine, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, has commanded Joseph share his best with Joseph's family. He gives them a place to live. Now turn to the end of this chapter, verse 27. Thus Israel settled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen. And they gained possessions in it, and they were fruitful, and they multiplied greatly. The structure is easy to follow. Pharaoh offers Joseph's family a great place to live, and they live there. And while they are there, they prosper. They gain possessions. And even in the middle of a devastating famine, they have enough food to multiply. Most people read the story of Joseph jumping from verse 11 and 12 straight to verse 27, from blessing to more blessing. And that's because we haven't learned well how to read these stories. Look, let's notice what Joseph is actually up to. To do that, we need just a little bit of background. And so jump back to chapter 21 with me. You don't have to turn there. I'm just going to highlight and summarize some of it. But Joseph is made second in command over all of Egypt. His job is to administer a food collection program that would help Egypt survive a coming famine. And so the plan is over 7 years, Joseph collects one-fifth, there's that five number again, remember, one-fifth of all grain produced. And we're told that the earth produced abundantly, so that this wasn't a burden for anybody to give a fifth of what came in. And the idea was that Joseph was keeping all of this excess grain safe. So when the famine comes, it would be there for all of the people to share, and there was going to be more than enough. In fact, in chapter 41, verse 49, we're told, Joseph stored up grain in great abundance. Listen to this. Like the sand of the sea until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. That's a lot of grain, right? I want you to think about what this resource is. It's kind of like Social Security, right? The idea is that we pay into Social Security for years, and that at the end, at retirement, we are supposed to receive back what we put in. It's not a tax that's then used for some other purpose. Joseph is doing what the early church would later do, collecting and holding for safekeeping shared resources, shared family resources, so that there would be no need among them. Joseph does this for 7 years, and then the famine hits. Which gets us to our passage this morning, chapter 47, verses 13 through 27, where we hear the story of how Joseph then administers the food distribution program. Before we read, turn on your wisdom cap, right? When you go to collect Social Security, what does it cost you, right? What do you pay the government to get your Social Security check? Nothing, right? The resources are already yours. You gave them and now you're just getting them back. Or think about the church, right? You give some of your resources for all of us to share. If you come on hard times and you need help paying a bill or whatever, and you ask our benevolence team for help, what will they require you for payment? Nothing, because our resources are our resources. The same is true of Egypt's grain. It belongs to the people. Joseph is merely holding it safe and secure, or so you would think. Chapter 47, verse 14, we read, Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan in exchange for the grain that they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. Notice, Joseph sells the grain back to the people who first shared it freely. Just consider this. He sells back to the people what already belonged to them. And in a moment, Joseph is transformed. He is no longer a steward of a shared resource. He has become a thief, taking both their grain and now their money, until there is no money left, because Pharaoh has all of the money and the remaining grain. But it doesn't take long for the grain that he distributes to run out, and the people are hungry again, and they have no money, and so they come back to him. And in verse 16, we hear Joseph say, give your livestock, and I will give you food in exchange for your livestock if your money is gone. And so they do. And Joseph gathers up all of Egypt's livestock for Pharaoh. But a year later, the food is gone again, and so the people come back to Joseph. And in verse 18, they say, there's nothing left in my sight of my Lord but our bodies and our land. Buy us and our land for food, and we with our land will be slaves to Pharaoh. Can you imagine the kind of poverty where you would be willing to sell not only your body, but everything you have? This is the position they're in. And so what does Joseph do? He buys all of their land with their grain. And now the land becomes Pharaoh's. And then in verse 21, Joseph made slaves of them from one end of Egypt to the other. just let that hang in the air for a second. Who have you always imagined Joseph to be? How did Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat miss this part of the story? Joseph made them slaves. The one sold into slavery turns around and enslaves a nation. Although some of our translations like to soften it and call them servants, this is the exact same word that will describe the Israelites' slavery to the Egyptians at the beginning of Exodus. If this isn't bad enough, we get a final detail that confirms for us exactly who Joseph has become in this role. When any new harvest comes in, based on the seeds he's now given them to plant in the land that belongs to Pharaoh, the people are now required to give a fifth of it all to Pharaoh. And now this isn't for some future famine. This isn't a shared pot. This is all for Pharaoh. It is explicit in the text. And the very next verse says, Israel settled in the land and they gained possessions in it and were fruitful and multiplied in it. Only two kinds of people gained possessions during the famine, Pharaoh and Joseph's family. Everyone else lost everything. So where does Pharaoh and Joseph's family get all of their possessions? Straight from the Egyptians. All of the wealth of Egypt is redistributed from the Egyptians to Joseph's boss and Joseph's family. Joseph was one of the most effective administrators the world has ever seen. He was also one of the world's most unjust. Later on in Israel's history, the book of Samuel tells the story of a prophet warning the Israelites about the dangers of having a king rule over them. And his list of warnings, 1 Samuel chapter 8, sounds just like he's reading Joseph's story in Genesis 47. He says, a king is going to make you work for him. A king is going to take your best produce and give it to his own people. A king is going to take your flocks and your land. A king is going to make you his slaves. Joseph was made to rule and have dominion in the image of God. That's what creation, what Genesis chapter 1 says. But we don't see the image of God in Joseph. We see Joseph bearing the image of Pharaoh, a different way of ruling, ruthless, power hungry, greedy, and above all, partial. Partial to Benjamin over his other brothers. Partial to his brothers over the Egyptians, which leaves us asking this question, where is God in all of this, right? It's fascinating when you follow the story because as Joseph starts in slavery, we read, Yahweh was with Joseph and he became a successful man. Later, Joseph winds up in prison, and there we read again in the scriptures, Yahweh was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Yahweh was with Joseph when he was enslaved and when he was in prison, but the moment Joseph is raised up to Pharaoh's second in command, we never again read that Yahweh is with Joseph. Read through the story. We are being trained to look, to discern, to notice how and where God is at work in the world. And all of Genesis has been preparing us to read this story well. We know that God blesses Abraham, not for Abraham's own sake. He blesses Abraham's descendants, not for their own sake, but so that they will then be a blessing to the nations. God told Abraham, I will bless those who bless you. Egypt welcomes Joseph's family in the middle of a famine, gives them great land, feeds them when they're hungry. And how does Joseph repay them? By taking everything they have from them. Joseph fundamentally misreads the situation. He seems to assume that he has been raised to this position for the sake of his family, not for the sake of the nations. And so in the final verses of the entire book of Genesis, Joseph is looking back. He's looking back at what his brothers did to him. He's looking back at what it meant to be sold into slavery. And this is what he can say definitively. What you, saying this to his brothers, meant for evil against me, God meant it for good. Joseph is saying something that is so profoundly true, right? You enslaved me, but God used my slavery to give life to everyone. It's great news that God can take our evil and bring good out of it. But I think the Joseph story actually has a second part to it. One that Joseph can't see. One that we can't see. We often have not seen as we've read this passage unless the Spirit of Jesus helps us see it. And it's this, that what God meant for good, Joseph used for evil against the Egyptians. To say this another way, what God meant as a source of life for everyone, Joseph used to enslave everyone. What God meant for good, raising Joseph up to this position where he could be a servant and a blessing, Joseph takes and distorts into something else, into something that enslaves people so that everyone is enslaved except for his family because he's partial. His brothers sell him into slavery and Joseph forgives them. A single Egyptian buys Joseph as a slave and he enslaves their whole nation. Joseph gives his favorite brother five times as much as his half-brothers. Joseph takes a fifth from the Egyptians in perpetuity and nothing from his family. Like, this is the very definition of partiality. But we have to acknowledge this about Joseph. He comes by it honestly. Isaac and Rebekah each have their favorite children. Jacob loves Joseph more than the rest. Almost everyone we've encountered in the Bible so far has been shaped by favoritism in their families. And the Bible, it just overflows with stories of people and nations who play favorites. In fact, the oldest stories of ancient gods are all basically stories of the gods playing favorites and being partial. And so it's in a world of favoritism. It's in a world of partiality where Yahweh comes along and declares an end to it. It's over. It will not be this way among my people and in my kingdom. Deuteronomy 10:17 will describe Yahweh as the one who is not partial. Ephesians 6:9 describes Yahweh saying there is no partiality within him. Pick either of those verses and you will have a field day following every cross-reference to every passage that shows God's impartial nature and behavior. I mean, you could then spend hours searching the scriptures for every command and insight calling followers of Jesus, followers of Yahweh, to reject partiality. But this is the message of this morning in a nutshell, in a summary. Like, if we were made in the image of God, we ought to rule like God. Fairly, impartially. Just like God. If we were made in the image of God, we ought to rule like God, fairly and impartially, just like God. And I want to say, this is one of the central questions in the entire Bible. How? Like, how do we do this? How do we live? How do we reign in our own families and in our neighborhoods with justice and righteousness in the image of God? How do we do this? It feels big and daunting. Another way of asking it, how do we use what God intends for good as actual blessing for our neighbors and for the nations? In light of Joseph's story, we might just finish with a thought on material blessings. Partiality has at least something to do with how we distribute the things we have that we call blessings. Who gets our stuff. And why? If all of our wealth goes to only our kids when we die, are we any different from Joseph, who blessed his family but not the nations? If we live in relative comfort and ease while our spiritual brothers and sisters struggle and toil in an endless cycle of poverty, like, are we any different from Joseph, who blesses his family but not the nations? If we have storehouses full of tomorrow's bread while our neighbors don't have enough for their daily bread, are we any different from Joseph? We serve a king who came to show us what the image of God looks like in flesh and blood. He showed us a kingdom where there is enough bread for everyone with baskets full of leftovers. Like, he showed us a kingdom where rich and poor and Jew and Gentile and slave and free and male and female are all made to be full and equal citizens in his kingdom. He showed us a kingdom that needs stewards today. Like, women and men who will serve in the image of God, who will generously share our possessions, who will generously share our positions and our privileges and our power. This King, Jesus, invites us today to share in his life and in his family and in all that he has. And all of this for us begins at his table, where we experience his generous life given for us. If our team would come and lead us in a song of response, as I invite you to come to the table, would you come and receive the bread and the cup? Would you receive from Jesus his blessing and hear in him a call, an invitation to share what you've been blessed with your neighbors, with the nations.